I was actually very surprised. We had sung at a performance when Swami was here, the song "To Death I'm a Stranger," and on the way back in the car, he said, "That song came to me. It was like from the heart of a young Jewish man who had died in the Holocaust, and that's how the song came to me."
Stop. manger, yes, strangest of all, the stranger I fear is a stranger to me. Can shadows strike fear that hide from the sun? What horror brings death? In light I am free. Yet see how the night sky, which banishes the sun, is banished in turn by the gypsy who camps on the way. At dawn his dark caravans gone.
Well, this morning brings us to the final of these three classes, which is about death. And as we started out on Monday, it's the time of death when we, as Swami calls it, we take our final exam. And we either pass that final exam or we don't quite pass that final exam, or we totally fail that final exam. Now, none of us are going to totally fail the final exam. Anybody who meditates, anybody who tries to live a spiritual life, is already well on the way of passing that final exam. But it takes great, great dedication and great freedom to actually score 100%. It's like getting all the answers right on the SATs. And, you know, who is it? Dennis Shulman, that's his business, is to prepare students for the SATs. And he has them take practice tests. And if you take practice tests before you take the final exam, you're much more likely to pass. Well, people who meditate for 30 or 40 years have taken 30, 40,000 practice tests for that final exam. That's why even if we don't get all the answers correct, even if we aren't completely free, we're well, well on the way to that freedom. Again, as Master said, it takes very, very, very good karma to even want to know God, and to make a serious, serious search for him, the way most of us are doing in this lifetime, is really a rare and extraordinary birth, but it is also a rare and an extraordinary opportunity. Let's not waste it. You know, even though we know that we're going to come back and continue on with the journey that we've started, nonetheless, it's a roll of the dice. And to have the situation that we have now with a great, great avatar leading us and someone of the caliber of Swamiji being our personal teacher and personal friend and community and environment all supportive to that spiritual search, that really, really is a rare birth. There aren't many places on earth, very, very few places on earth, that are as conducive to the search for God as the circumstances we have right now. And why roll the dice and see if we can improve on the odds? It's just not worth it. I'm going to read a couple of things, one from Master describing the process of dying. By the way, if you don't have these books, the Wisdom of Yogananda series, there are, what, six of them now, I believe. Yeah, and I assume we'll continue to come out with more, but they are absolutely, absolutely wonderful. If nothing else, keep one on your bedside and read a little bit at night before you go to bed, or a little bit in the morning when you get up, because the wisdom of Yogananda in these bite-sized chunks, if you take a little bit like that and try to absorb it, it will literally, it will change your life, and more importantly, it'll change your death. Okay, the ordinary man at the time of death experiences the following sensations: gradual numbness of the limbs, muscles, heart, lungs, and diaphragm. During the spreading numbness in the limbs and muscles, a sense of sadness, helplessness, and desire to live comes into the mind. 3. When the numbness reaches the heart muscles, a sense of pain and suffocation is experienced, which causes an extreme fear of death. An attachment toward possessions and loved ones strongly comes upon the soul and causes extreme mental grief. 4. With the pain of suffocation, there is great mental struggle to bring the breath back again. At this time, a condensed review of all the good and bad actions of his lifetime comes up in the mind of the dying man. From this mental introspection comes the guiding tendency in determining the kind of birth and the dying man will have in the next life. 5. At this time, the senses of touch, taste, smell, sight, and hearing vanish in succession. The sense of hearing is the last to leave the consciousness of the dying man. That is why it is extremely unwise even to whisper within the hearing of a dying person, "All is over, he's about to die." And then he tells a story about some students of his, a brother who brought his sister back from dying by calling to her after it appeared that she had passed away. 6. The ordinary person, after he experiences a sense of suffocation, finds himself suddenly relieved of the weight of the body, of the necessity of breathing, and of any physical pain. 7. After that, the soul of the dead man enters into a state of oblivious sleep, a million times deeper and more enjoyable than the state of ordinary deep sleep. 8. A sense of soaring through a very peaceful, dark tunnel is experienced by the soul. 9. Sometimes, when a dying man dies quickly, for instance, by hanging or electrocution or from a shot or a sudden accident, he experiences practically no physical pain. Then he goes on to say that a good person dying that way experiences no pain at all. And then he says, then the astral body becomes the base of operations after death. I like that, base of operations. And then he talks some about the astral plane. So that's the death of an ordinary man. And let's turn to the Bhagavad Gita and see what happens to the extraordinary man. That person, excuse me, that person attains the supreme effulgence, O Partha, or Arjuna, who his mind by long practice firmly fixed on me, thinks of me only. This is chapter 8 and stanza 9 and 10. The yogi, at the time of his death, attains that supreme effulgent state, provided that with deep love and focused power through the practice of yoga, he succeeds in penetrating his consciousness and energy through the katusta between the eyebrows, the seat of the spiritual eye. And if he maintains his attention unwaveringly on that being who beyond all delusion of gloom and darkness shines like the sun, whose form is subtler than the finest atom, who is the ultimate support of all existence and the great ruler of eternal omniscience. I'm going to come back to that because there are two or three very important things. I will now relate to you briefly that truth and the method of attaining it. The Vedic seers declare to be immutable, and which sannyasis gain by dissolving their attachments through a life of self-discipline and transcendence of all passion. That person reaches the highest goal, who closes the gates or openings of the body, sequesters the mind in the heart center, channels all his life force to the brain, and engages steadfastly thereby in the practice of yoga. Such a one, established in Om, the holy word of Brahma, is able to remember me at the final moment of his emergence from the body. And finally, I am reached easily by that yogi of single heart, the heart's feelings focused and uplifted, who keeps me in his consciousness daily, continuously focused wholly on me. So we have these two options, door A, which is pain and suffocation and fear and oblivion, followed by diapers in high school. Or we have door A, B, who leads to eternal bliss and merging into the light and the knowledge of self-realization and of oneness, but most of all of ever new, ever expanding bliss, as Master says. Now I want to touch just briefly on three very important points, because just reading it, they can slip by. So coming back to the stanzas 8 and 9, the yogi at the time of his death attains that supremely effulgent state, provided that with deep love, that means devotion to God and Guru, and is developed by a practice of a lifetime of developing that devotion. It's not like you get to that point and all of a sudden you remember, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be devoted. And because the body is going through this process of separation, and even the great yogis have some reluctance of death. That's what Lahiri Mahashaya said. So you have to develop deep love with focused power through the practice of yoga. So you have to develop deep devotion, and you have to develop deep concentration. And then finally, he succeeds in penetrating his energy through the katusta between the eyebrows, and he maintains his attention unwaveringly on that being who beyond all delusion and so on. So there are three conditions there. One is devotion. The next is complete focused attention. And then the final one is the focused attention passing through the spiritual eye and focused on God or Guru. And if we can attain those three at the time of death, then we merge with the infinite and we are freed from the time, from the compulsion to reincarnate again. And so that's what Master told Swami, that his final test would be death and that he wouldn't attain to that until the time of death. And so it's at that time, but that promise is also there for Swami, implying that he will. And so to achieve that supreme goal and supreme state at the time of death is basically the goal of what? 100 million incarnations. And so it's not an easy thing to do. That's why when we have the circumstances that we have in this life, we have the knowledge that this is what we're trying to do. That alone, that knowledge is not given to, that comes really with the realization of it, really that you know and you want that. That doesn't come to 1 in 1,000 people, maybe fewer than that. That's why out of 1,000, one seeks me. It's really seeking him is seeking to go into the light at the time of death. And out of 1,000 who try to do that, one perhaps succeeds. And so having the very knowledge and being in a lifetime with these supremely helpful circumstances in order to get there is an extremely rare and extremely valuable gift from God and Guru. Obviously, it comes to us because we want it. God chooses those who choose him. And in the past, we have chosen and we have tried to pass this final exam probably many, many times. But the mere attempt to do that changes the whole of one's life. So the way to do that is basically what our life is about, the way of achieving that. Now, we've had some remarkable passings in this community. I was going to talk about one, but I glanced at Davy's notes and decided not to steal her material. Even though it is the right of the person who goes first. But so I'm going to leave to her the talking about Paula's passing, which was really very remarkable.
Thanks.
But I want to talk a little bit about Maria's passing, which happened just over a year ago. Maria Warner, who was a wonderful, wonderful soul. And she found out she had been battling cancer. Most of you know this, but a few of you may not. She had been battling cancer for many years, and it had gone into remission. And then about around Thanksgiving time of last year, she was on a trip with Devarshi to Dallas, and she started experiencing severe headaches and dizziness. And she realized at that time that the cancer had returned. And so they got back here, and then they were going into the hospital to have a CAT scan. And she knew, but you know, you go through these things anyway, because it's what you're supposed to do. And so Devarshi was a little, you know, he was having a little bit of a difficult time, and he was wheeling her into the hospital in a wheelchair. And she just turned to him and she said really immortal words. Now, emblazon these words on your consciousness, because it's the summation of everything that we've been reading here. She turned to Devarshi and she said, detach yourself, control the reactive process, and live the teachings. And then kind of motioned for him to keep wheeling her. Detach yourself, control the reactive process, and live the teachings. Now I'll add a final one to that, which is practice going into the light at the spiritual eye. That those things are the summation of what we need to work on in order to pass this final exam. So I want to talk a little bit about each of them. Now, detach yourself is much more than just a mental process. It's a lifelong practice. Swami has given us a number of techniques, including the one of every night feeling your heart and feeling if there's any attachment there at all, attachment to anything. And if there is, to cast it mentally into a bonfire at the spiritual eye. Now, what is that practice doing? That's doing exactly the preparation for the final exam, isn't it? Because if we have attachments at the time of death, we're going to go through the process of the worldly person. We're going to feel great fear, and when the breath stops, in that kind of time of panic and a little bit of pain, Master said it only lasts 2 or 3 seconds. So don't feel like, oh, it's this endless suffering. It only lasts 2 or 3 seconds. But the mental pain and the mental fear of losing life awakens all of our attachments and gives them enormous power in the consciousness. And so if you have lingering attachments, at the time of the death, they're going to get awakened with more power than they've ever had, because you're going to have them ripped from you in a very short period of time. And the mind realizes that, and it tries to grasp on. So the practice of getting rid of those attachments is very, very important. You know, we get these techniques, and something as simple as this, it just sounds like, oh yeah, sure. That's kind of like little mental arithmetic, and I'll remember to do it when I can, and otherwise I'll skip it. But doing it, and doing it daily, see, by doing it daily, what it does is it allows you to review during that day. And it's like, I don't know, getting a photograph that is an 100-megapixel photograph or a 1,000-megapixel photograph. And you get to zero in on exactly that day. Reminds me, I enjoy these things, so I'll just share it. There's a man who is a ex-NASA scientist, and he was in charge of doing the lenses and the cameras for the NASA satellites that took the images of the Earth and so on. So he was an expert in extreme photography. And when he retired, he created a camera that was carried around on this huge tripod in a van, and it was like a 5,000 megapixel camera. And I saw a picture of the Grand Canyon that he took. And you've seen the pictures of the Grand Canyon. And it was this vast, vast array. And you could just barely discern in one little place that there was something that looked like maybe it was a flat spot or a lookout or something. Then there was a little square, you know, and it showed that, yes, indeed, here was where the visitors came, and they came up there, and that was where they could stand and look out. And it was, you know, like, I don't know, probably 100 yards across and 50 yards high. But in that, you could see clearly that that's what it was. Then there was a picture in which you saw the cross links of the chains of the fence. So that extreme detail. Well, you get that extreme detail in this case with a camera that has a lot of sensitivity and memory. You get that extreme detail in your consciousness by doing it every night. If you wait and only do it once a year, or once every 10 years, or 2 nights before your body's going to pass away, you don't get much detail. You just get, oh yeah, I should not be attached to things. But it isn't going to be enough at that time. So you have to work on your non-attachment, and you need to pluck those things daily from your heart. You need to do it by reviewing the day and seeing basically where you fouled up. Because we do that every day. We do things, you know, Master said that during a day, roughly 1,000 thoughts come into the mind. And we have desires, we have attachments, we have reactions. You know, I'm going to go on to the second one, control the reactive process. But our reactive process is going on all the time. And unless we learn to control that, the reactive process in and of itself produces attachments. So what we need to do is we need to work on getting rid of that reactive process. But part of that is this nightly review that allows you to see, oh yeah, I reacted to that. And then to look and see whether you have a pattern of reaction to certain things. I got upset when I went into the market and that person ignored me. And I thought they were going to say hello, and they didn't. They ignored me. And so I got upset with them. Well, that person was probably looking at the ingredients in the soup can that they were buying. It had nothing to do with you. But the reactive process in you, personalizing that experience, makes it seem like, well, they should be a certain way. Thinking that a person or people should be a certain way is an attachment. It's an attachment to your own way of thinking, your own way of feeling. And so by reviewing daily or nightly those things where we had the reactive process and then saying, I'm going to cast that one into the fire. And deep-seated ones, you cast it again and again and again. It's like mowing the grass, you know. You think mowing the grass finishes it off, and lo and behold, it doesn't. But you keep doing it, you keep doing it, you keep doing it, and finally it does. It kills off those reactive processes. So that's a very important thing. I had an interesting, excuse me. I had an interesting meditation while we were in Pune, and I was debating whether to share this or not this morning, but I think it might be helpful. At any rate, I guess partly being in the land of India, partly being there in Pune, and really we were in quite an uplifted state during that time. We were kind of connecting with a lot of people and teaching daily and being with Swami. Anyway, it was a very inspiring and uplifted time. And I was meditating one morning, and the thought came into my mind, what if Babaji materialized right here, right now in front of me, and said, come with me? Would I do it? You know, I mean, you think, oh, sure, I'd do it. But it began to put me through a real mind trip, because asking that question and posing it in that way, would I walk away? Was I ready to walk away from everything? You know, I can leave my car. That's, you know, that kind of stuff. But the sense of responsibility, the sense of family, the sense of connectedness, the sense that you're doing something that seems to be useful in the world, all of those little niggling things that aren't so niggling. At any rate, that question posed in that way made me ask really the question, how unattached am I? How ready to leave? Because in a sense, you can say, well, I'm ready for death anytime. I'm not afraid of death. Death can take me. But death in this way of the ordinary man, everybody goes through that. That isn't dying consciously, dying by choice. It's just something that happens to you, and you've got to go through it, whether you do it well or do it badly. But having a choice to walk away as if to death, obviously not. And obviously, as yogis, we know that death isn't death either. But going into that, And so it was a very helpful, very good meditation. And I think it might be helpful for each of you, if you want to have a meditation on which you ask that question and visualize that and see what comes of that. At any rate, working on the question of detachment is essential to passing the final exam, because if we don't detach, we are, by that very thing, that is the mechanism that creates reincarnation. Desire and attachment is why we come back. Really no other reason. So we have a chance to work on that. Control the reactive process. Now, we've talked about this, so I won't go on very much at length, but we have to learn to control the reactive process. Partly because not so much that it matters that we get upset with somebody in the market. I mean, that's just a little example that really in and of itself is not meaningful or not very meaningful. Maybe the patterns underlying that are a little bit more meaningful, but even the patterns that we have are not that meaningful. It's the process itself that is important. It's the fact that we are caught in the web of likes and dislikes. As I mentioned yesterday, it has to do with the chitta, the feeling nature in the heart. And we're caught in the web of having the feeling nature be reactive. I like this, I don't like that. And it gets, again, the picture of the Grand Canyon, it gets subtler and subtler and subtler, down to fleeting little thoughts that you're barely even conscious of, but are constantly keeping that reactive process going. I don't like hard chairs. I don't like it to being too hot. Why don't they open the window? Why don't they shut the window? Why is the chair so soft? You know, things that we barely even touch on, it's that constant reactive process. So you can't really get to it consciously. You can't get to, it's like mowing the field with tweezers. You know, you can't go out there and pluck every little stem of grass up. You can't stop every little piece of reactive nature that you have, but you can work on the process itself. You don't need to tweezer the field, start a fire and burn the whole thing, and it's gone in what, 5 minutes? Start a fire on the reactive process. Burn up that tendency. Now, you, as I say, you can't just get to it consciously. You can't do it by thinking. You can't do it with the mind, because the mind and the discrimination is a separate part of consciousness from the feeling nature. And in fact, we think that our feelings are under our control, under the control of the mind. It's much more the other way, that the mind is under the control of the feelings. And so the thoughts, Master said, thoughts are universally, not individually rooted. The thoughts, the tuning mechanism that draws those thoughts to us is the chitta, is more than anything else. So this is where the radio of your consciousness is getting tuned. And depending on the pattern of what you like and don't like, you're going to tune the radio of your consciousness to receive universal thoughts that you think that you've created, but you don't. So working on that reactive process, as I said yesterday, trying to get it to be even-minded and cheerful, that's one aspect. Detaching, that's another aspect of it. But I'm going to come back, but the way to work on that is not mentally, it's through yoga, it's through kriya, it's through hong sa. I'm going to come back to that. But the techniques that we have on the spiritual path are given exactly to us. They're exactly attuned to helping us pass this final exam. But I'm going to come back to that. So detach yourself, control the reactive process, and live the teachings. Now, living the teachings is, you can't do it without living the teachings outwardly, but more importantly, we can't achieve this state without living the teachings of meditation, of pranayama, of, as Swami put it, of guru bhakti, guru seva, and meditation. Unless we live those teachings, unless we live guru bhakti, guru seva, and meditation, we can't control the reactive process and we can't detach ourselves, and we're set up to fail the final exam. Or at least, fail sounds like there are only two choices. You either pass or you fail. Well, that might be true in the extreme, but really for us, it's pass or not quite pass in that lifetime. And we're, you know, there are millions of lifetimes, and we're in the final tick of a final few. And the question is whether this is the final tick or whether there's still a few more ticks left. So it's not like massive failure, yes or no. It's whether we're going to make it this time or not. But as I say, we have such a rare and beautiful life circumstance now that why gamble on not trying to get out this time? Swami has said to all of us that we should try in this lifetime to be jivan muktas, meaning that we're free from ego. That means, implies that we go into nirvikalpa samadhi, which implies that we go breathless, which implies that we have controlled that reactive process. Because in the spine, the reactive process is the movement of energy in the irida and pingala, which causes breath. And so really controlling that is to stop the breath. So we should be working on trying to stop the breath and being jivan muktas. One time, Devi said, we were discussing a couple of years ago, and she said, you know, I'm just not sure that I'm going to be a jivan mukta in this life. It just seems like an awfully high goal. And I said to her, well, you'd better expect it and then have plan B. And then the sequel to the story is that a couple of years later, or not a couple of years, a year or so later, we were giving a Sunday service in Seattle. And she went first, and she told that. And then she sat down, and I came up. It was my turn to talk. And so I came up, and I said, in case you don't know who I am, thought I'd introduce myself, I'm Plan B. And so, at any rate, Swami has said to each of us that we should have the goal of being jivan muktas in this life. So that implies that we should have the goal of being able to go breathless in our meditation and being able to be completely absorbed in the light or in Om. And so that's what I want to end with, is talking about our techniques in terms of this final exam, because each of them are specifically designed in order to help us with this. Hong Sa, what is the goal of Hong Sa? To control the breath. Why do we say Hong Sa? Because it's a bija mantra that helps to control the energy in the irida and the pingala. That's why with the inhalation we say Hong, with the exhalation we say Sa. That mantra helps to settle down and control that reactive process. And so there's sometimes the sense that we get that well, we have these techniques, but that's an easy one. I learned that a long time ago. I don't need to pay much attention. Reminds me when Davy and I were starting the San Francisco ashram, we were giving a class series in a church, in the Unitarian Church. And it was a big church, and there were several classes going on. And this was the night of registration, so we had a little table and a little class saying how to meditate. And these two kind of socialite ladies, nicely dressed, came up. And Davy was there at the table, and one of them said, "Oh, what's this class?" And Davy said, "It's on how to meditate." She said, "Oh, meditation, we already did that one." So Hong saw, "We already did that one. Let's get on to the real stuff." Master, when he was young, 8 or 9 years old, practiced Hong saw for 8 hours at a time. So obviously he was an avatar. He came back, and don't feel bad that when you were eight, you didn't didn't practice Hong saw for 8 hours at a time. But do take the learning experience that this is an extremely important, if we can pass the practice of Hong saw successfully, that alone allows us to pass the final exam. Because when we do that, if we can go breathless and go out through the spiritual eye, which is what Hong saw is trying to help us to do, if we can do that, then that is the final exam. That's why in the Bible, John says, "I protest by the Christ that is within me that I die daily." Being born again means to do that. Truly, to the born-again Christians don't quite have the essence of it. It isn't an article of belief or faith. It's the ability to withdraw the energy from the ira and the pingala, or the reactive process, into the deep spine and pass it up through the heart and then through the spiritual eye. And if we can do that, if we can practice that, then we are practicing for the final exam. So Hong saw and Kriya and Jyoti Mudra. Jyoti Mudra, Kriya, obviously, what is it? It's meant to bring the energy into the Sushumna. If we can do that successfully, that's where we go into the effulgence, into the Katusta Chaitanya, into the light of 1,000 suns. So all three of these techniques, and Jyoti Mudra, which is meant to awaken the light, and looking into that and trying to go into that after meditation, all of these are practice. It's the preparation for the final exam. Again, if you want to roll the dice and come back another time and not know whether you have these specific techniques or not in that lifetime, then that's a choice. But at the very least, let's really, really do the best we can with this life to go into that depth of meditation. I would like to end just saying that it's been a tradition to try to have a kind of a exercise that we practice together. As I said, last year we were talking more about practicing the presence of God, and I suggested as a group that we learn the poem, God, 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 and that we repeat that on a regular basis, daily basis. This time I would like to suggest that we spend this year deeply, deeply practicing the techniques, especially of Hong saw, and of trying to penetrate into the light at the spiritual eye after Kriya and after Jyoti Mudra, so that we get into a group practice of, at the end of our meditation, we don't just let the mind go restless and figure we're done, but that we, when the energy is already somewhat withdrawn, that we really deeply practice trying to go in and achieve that freedom of consciousness. And that then also, so that's meditation, that's the meditation part of it. Then also during the day, try to feel that your consciousness is coming from the spiritual eye. Even try to feel that there's kind of light there, that this represents a kind of a horizon line, and it's like dawn, and light is coming into that line, into the sky above that horizon line, and that the dawn of consciousness is there all of the time, and that your consciousness is being enlightened or given energy and grace by that dawn. But live more and more. Try to feel that your thoughts, your relationships, your aspect is coming more from the spiritual eye. Master said the very fastest way to make progress is to keep your consciousness at the spiritual eye all the time. One of the disciples of Master did that for a few days, and he felt the energy withdrawing from his body. And he had several days where he felt kind of numb, as if the energy was withdrawn, and finally had to pray to Master to release him from that, because he was a printer and he was afraid that he was going to harm himself working around machinery. But the point here, whether he had to get released from that nice state or not, the point here is that he got there by keeping his consciousness there at the spiritual eye. And so, one, let's try very deeply in our meditation to get into the breathless state, or at least so that the reactive process is very, very much dimmed down. That is the premier way to cut attachments, to get out of the body. Then during the daytime, during our normal activities, let's try to feel that we're coming more and more from the spiritual eye, until it all begins to meld together and we're living this life that is the preparation for the final exam.